My name is Daniel Sue. I'm the Associate Director of the Innovations for Successful Societies project, and I'm here with Professor Nchomi at the University of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. So thank you very much for taking time out of your very hectic schedule to meet with me. Really appreciate it, and looking forward to hearing a little bit more about your involvement with the developments of the Tanzanian Police Reform Program. So before we begin, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your current position, and how you got involved with the Tanzanian Police Reform Program.
Thank you, Daniel. I work with the University of Dar es Salaam, and I've been working with the University of Dar es Salaam for some years now. My employment with the University of Dar es Salaam started in 1990. And I was posted in the Department of Civil and Criminal Law, where we teach criminal law, criminal procedures, essentially all matters related to criminal justice. And I've been teaching criminal law for several years now, as well as criminal procedure. And so my area of specialization essentially is criminal justice. I basically got involved in the police activities rather early, in terms of, it was just maybe two, three years after I've graduated from Queens, Canada. I did my master's at Queens, and my master's also related to criminal justice. So when I came back, there were a few issues related to policing and human rights. And I was among the few people who were selected actually to provide the training in terms of human rights and policing in a democratic system. So I participated in that program, which was being run under the Legal Aid Committee of the Faculty of Law, University of Dar es Salaam. So we used to go around the country, train police officers and other officers, meaning the prison officials, as well as judicial officials. Mm-hmm. And so we completed that project, which took us almost 3 years, basically.
When was this, sorry?
That was 1993, 94, 95, and a bit of 96. So we completed that particular component. And then we continued to work with the police in specific areas. Sometimes they would request us to provide a particular training in a particular area, for example, how to deal with fraud cases, or how to deal with cross-examination, because our police also, the police force used to be to provide prosecutors as well. So we used to have police prosecutors. So we used to train them in some skills in terms of how they prosecute in court. But the prosecution work has now been taken over officially by the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution. So it's now a separate function run under a different entity, and that's a result of the reforms that we are currently undertaking. So basically I'm working with them on a regular basis now. Since those days up to now, we do quite a lot of things, and that's why probably they think I can also speak for them in terms of a few things that has taken place. Yes.
So in terms of the most current program of reforms, which I understand is being conducted under the medium-term strategic plan, what is your involvement with that, and what has been your involvement in the sort of developments of this program?
First of all, the MTS that they have is a result of the legal sector reform program.
Okay.
And the legal sector reform program brings together a number of players who deal with legal issues, including now the police. Initially, the police was not part of the legal sector reform program when it began in the 90s. Then gradually, the police became part of the legal sector reform program, and therefore their medium-term strategic plans started to reflect the reforms that were targeted by the legal sector reform program. But before that, the police had already earmarked a few areas which needed reforms. One was the police general orders, most of the police forces around the world are organized around the police general orders. These are instructions which tell every police officer that this is the way you have to behave in a particular situation, among other things. That's their ground norm, we could say. It's their basic document. Mm-hmm. Now, that document was formulated several years back. Basically, it's a colonial heritage. It was inherited from the colonial police system. And in the 90s, the police realized that a lot of things have already changed. Mm-hmm. And the document was no longer serving a very useful purpose. And when they wanted to take certain actions in a particular area, then they realized that the document wouldn't really provide them with anything useful. And so the first assignment, which the Inspector General then thought would have been undertaken, was to review that document so that at least it's in line with the current development. But as usual, police officers are usually conservative. So some didn't really like the idea of reviewing a document that they have become used to, and they think it's a document that really helps them in doing things. But I think the topmost management thought, no, that cannot be the situation. So they started to look around for people who could provide some assistance in that regard. And they came to me, and I agreed to do the job. And I remember one of the officers came to me and told me categorically that you will not succeed in this document. It has been here for years, and many people have tried and they have failed. I said, well, I'm not, I don't believe in defeats. I believe in succeeding in whatever enterprise that I engage myself into. So let's try and then see exactly what will happen down the line. And I took that job with a colleague of mine who we also teach here. He's also teaching here in this department. The first thing we did was basically to look at the entire document, and we realized that actually it's not a question of amending, it's a question of rewriting the whole document, because mm-hmm. so many things had changed. You'll find one provision, okay, still relevant, but the rest of the provisions are probably not relevant. So it was about rewriting. We thought it would take 1 year, but then it ended up taking 3 years, because then the bulk of the things we have to do involved actually going and sitting and talking to the people who actually do the job on a regular basis. So 3 years down the line, we were able to come up with a new police general orders document. And it was a surprise of many. The document actually now reflected most of the issues that relate to democratic policing, which they thought would be an impossible task to put in a document. But we thought, well, you can learn from colleagues, you can learn from other places, best practices, among other things. Sometimes you don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's just about learning from others and see what they have done. So we're able to do that. And we think that document is quite a very good document in our own assessments, in terms of the region that we live in, Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, I don't think they have such a document. So it's quite a step ahead. It's quite a step ahead. And we thought there would be a lot of complaints from the practitioners, because now the police will have to practice what is contained in the document. But we're also surprised that no complaints actually came back to us, except a few areas which they said, this one you would have done, improved a bit better. Now, we think that's positive. Than when they will tell you that now it's making our work very difficult. You see, that would have been a different issue. But nobody's saying that the document is making their work difficult, except they think there are certain areas which would have provided even more.
Yeah.
So that at least they could do, they think that would have been a better thing. We have identified those areas, and we realize that now we have to deal with new challenges which were not there before. Cyber crime is becoming a challenging area, for example, and it's not addressed in the police general orders. We have terrorism, it's not addressed. We have also trafficking issues, which are also not addressed. But we realized that around that time, it wouldn't have been possible to address such issues, because we were still in the learning curve, and so you wouldn't really know exactly what direction to take.
Sorry, what time period was this, the 3 years that you were working on the...
That was 2001,
yeah.
2000, well, we could say 2005.
Okay, I see.
And
I wonder, I'm sure you must have a wealth of examples, but I wonder if you could just tell me a little bit about perhaps one example from the old general orders that just was no longer applicable in the context.
Mm-hmm. Well, for example, the previous orders did not have any operative principles. Mm-hmm. There were no principles exactly how policing is done.
Mm.
We thought that was a misnomer, because you know the policing has to be informed by certain philosophy and certain understanding. So we realized the absence of that make a police officer think that he's the decider, so he could come up with his own ideas about how policing is done, and that was a problem. I think most police institutions around the world, at least they start nowadays with at least the basic principles that would apply, and then the rest. But then the second was how do you effect an arrest, for example, in a real situation. While the laws outside had already developed to the extent of saying exactly how you can effect an arrest, arrest with warrant, arrest without warrant, all those situations were already predetermined by the law.
Mm-hmm.
The police general orders basically were silent about these kind of issues. So some of the arrests ended up becoming arbitrary. In which case, then, when you ask a police officer, say, but I followed the police general orders. There is no way in the police general orders that prohibits this kind of behavior.
Hmm.
Or, in some situation, you would have a provision which actually tells a police officer that this is the way you are supposed to do, to conduct a particular operation. But if you came outside the police force, the law had already changed, and that area is no longer permissible by the law. Okay, for example, premises, search of premises. In the past, premises could just be searched at will. But then the law had developed to the extent that now, no, you cannot search premises at will, because now we have a constitutional principle of privacy. So you cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So all these issues were lacunae.
Mm-hmm.
In the orders, but the biggest issue was that in 1984 we decided to enact the Bill of Rights, and the police general orders were predated the Bill of Rights, so a lot of things were contrary to what the Bill of Rights would basically require.
Hmm.
Also, in 1985 we enacted a new law, the Criminal Procedure Act, which was an improved document in terms of legal rights of individuals, and the police general orders actually were before that act was enacted. So a lot of things appeared contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
In general, the whole aspect of due process was an issue. So those are some of the areas, and you'd see that when you're writing police general orders, most of the issues must confirm the rights of individuals, at least first. But then second, must enable operations, police operations. That's the second. That while you have the rights of individuals, then you must enable also police operations. So there must be a balance, and that balance is always a very delicate balance. These are two regimes which don't fit very easily to each other. But
yeah.
You have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those were basically the kind of issues that we dealt with. And as a result, then, you realize the whole document had to be rewritten.
Right, yeah. Right. So, I mean, you mentioned that police officers are conservative, and that there's this delicate balance between confirming the rights of individuals and enabling officers to do their job.
Yeah.
And so in what way was this new document sort of sold to the police officers? How were they... I guess got on board with this new way of doing things?
What we did, we first of all organized what we call working sessions.
Mm-hmm.
We organized what we called working sessions, and these working sessions targeted. If, for example, we're dealing with, we have a unit which is a disaster management unit, for example, which is part of the police. Basically, it deals with riots. Essentially, it's about riots. Now, if you want to deal with that particular aspect, we organize working sessions with the individuals that manage that particular unit. And so we thought, this is all about change management, that how do you really make these people become your agent of change? And so me and my colleague took the approach that they should first identify the weaknesses themselves. If they could tell us exactly what are the hindrances and what are the good things that they think the document actually give them on a daily basis when they're doing their operational work. And you would realize that they will never refer to the document. So you come to a conclusion that in fact the document is a dead document as far as they are concerned, that they have their own other ways of dealing with these particular problems.
Sure.
Which will mean then you agree that the document needs to be changed. Then how do we change it? So we'll come with our ideas that, okay, suppose we went this direction. What do you think will be the benefits and the impediments to your own work? And usually you'll realize that they will usually start saying, but now we are used to this.
Mm-hmm.
And your job now is to tell them, okay, yes, that's because of the convenience it gives you. But what if we did this? Don't you think it will make your job easily? Now, through those working sessions, we came to a lot of agreements. And I am one of those people also who believe that don't force changes. Just make things flow the way they should, especially when it comes to operational matters. So we realized that certain things would be very difficult to change because people have already become accustomed to such behavior and therefore it would be difficult. But my measure was always that if I can afford to enlist at least about 80% of the changes, then the 20% I can afford to let it remain. Because then I know that it would be very easy to change the 20% when you have started to roll out the document. Because then they will discover the benefit of what you are telling them. And then be able to accept that the changes that you are proposing. And that's what we did, that we worked towards a certain target, that these certain things should be achieved. And once we have succeeded around that area, then we just let the other things proceed the natural way.
I see. So you identified the key things you wanted implemented, and then compromised on
certain issues.
On certain issues.
Exactly. So we had working sessions, but also we organized a series of workshops. A series of workshops with all the players, all from the rank and file all the way to the other top positions. But the third method which we used was to address the commanders themselves. They have what they call the annual meetings of commanders and half annual meetings of commanders. These commanders are regional police commanders, and you have also the commanders of certain units. There are so many of them. Yeah. So during those meetings, you basically tell them, this is what it is that you're supposed to do in this era. And then you'll generate a lot of discussion around that area. And so you know the feelings. You can measure now the feelings. And therefore, you know exactly what kind of interventions would need to be made in a particular area. And in that way, we were able to do quite a lot of things. But the good thing was the Inspector General himself, because he would say, now, my colleagues, I think we have to change. The world is changing. Because he has traveled a lot, he would see what other people do.
Mm-hmm.
So he was also a very good instrument, if I could use that term, in terms of change.
But was this the former IGP?
Former.
Okay.
Former. The current IGP came when the order is already in place
already
and they are rolling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we used quite a few interventions, and I think they all proved it to be very useful. in terms of achieving the changes that we really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So once we have completed the police general orders, of course there were other issues to address. Now, you talk, because the 20% that I'm talking about,
yes,
probably had a lot of other explanations why it was impossible to change. And these related to systems that you have in place, some related to the laws that you have in place, some also related to operational difficulties that you encounter. Dar es Salaam, you have been in Dar es Salaam now, I don't know for how long, but you could see the way Dar es Salaam is built. Dar es Salaam is not a very well organized city, and that tells you of all other cities in Tanzania. Police use a patrol system. They use a beat system. You have several beats in different areas. Now, these patrols envisage a certain order in the way the city is organized. Beats also envisage a certain order in the way the city is organized. So if you were to deal with that system in terms of change, then you'll have to change the organization of the towns and cities, which is almost an impossible enterprise.
Yeah.
So you realize if you tell a police officer, no, organize your beats. Why do you have 10 beats? Why don't you have 20 beats? But where do you place them?
Mm.
And then you will need a lot of tools and other things which then make the whole exercise impossible.
Mm.
Patrolling at a city like Dar es Salaam using Land Rovers, for example.
This is part two of the interview?
Yeah.
We're just talking about beats and how you arrange beats in a very chaotic
design,
yes,
of the city.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd have you have problems, logistical problems,
mm-hmm.
in terms of reforms, because then you will be talking about not reforming the police, but reforming the way you conceive towns and cities and
mm-hmm.
organize them, mm-hmm. which then make it not part of the police itself, but part of a larger problem,
yeah,
that has,
yeah,
to be addressed,
yeah,
by many people. So, and then you have laws, laws which probably offer limited explanation to certain things. For example, if you said a person is arrested, should be taken to the police, to the court, as soon as possible, and then there is no measure. How soon is soon, usually? So if you tell a police officer that no, that should be within 1 hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, then you have other limitations in remote areas where they think, it can't be possible because the nearest court is 10 miles away. Okay, that's the nearest court. Then it can't be this. The measure of how soon is soon really has to be relative. It has to be relative. It can't be really, you can't have a very objective way of determining exactly how it is. So you can use some laws, say, without undue delay. What is it that is undue in terms of delay?
Mm.
Again, when you look at the geography and other things, you realize that can only be measured in a very subjective way. There is no way you can. So those also make it difficult to really gauge exactly how a police officer should behave in a particular situation. And also you have laws which will give a particular power to an individual, okay? But then it wouldn't really say much in terms of how that particular power is exercised. So if you decided to do that in the police general orders, then the police again feel like you're just trying to constrain them, because the law doesn't really say that. The law has given them this unlimited kind of terrain to operate.
I see.
And if you constrain them, then you must have a lot of discussion,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah,
really convince them that, it's only unfortunate that the law did not go to the extent of prescribing exactly
mm-hmm.
how that particular power should be discharged, of that particular function should be discharged. But now, you as individual being, you need to have your own system of how you discharge that particular function and realize the powers
mm-hmm.
that you have been accorded with.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have systems the systems themselves were not configured, were not designed to talk to each other. You realize you have the police force, you have the prisons, you have the courts, you have everybody that you think is important in the law enforcement. They are there. But then how does each of these entities enable the work of another? For example, if today we talk of intelligence-led policing, mm-hmm. how do you utilize the available intelligence for police function? It means that the two systems must be able to talk to each other. Now, if you don't have a mechanism of making them talk to each other, then you can't just reform the police and tell them it has to be intelligence-led, because then it won't work in real terms. So those, again, all the matters of system. But also we realized in terms of the institution itself, because it's one thing to give it the orders, but then it's another thing to have an institution that can work along those orders. The police is not all that endowed, so in terms of facilities. Mm-hmm. And by the time we were doing the reforms, it really had quite a lot of problems in terms of facilities. Mm-hmm. It was also not well endowed in terms of personnel, and which means then its geographical coverage would also be a problem. So it was not covering it was not evenly distributed. And when you use the concept of evenly distributed, of course, in the police science, sometimes some people don't understand it. We are not saying that you cover the whole country the same way, but you cover the whole country in terms of policing activity. So each area will have its own policing needs. So the concept of evenly distribution is not like in water that it's all covered same way. No. It's that you have these services available, mm-hmm. as and when they are needed. Okay, that's the concept. Now, if the police force is not endowed in terms of resources, both financial, logistical, human, is not that endowed, then you'll have a problem. In which case, then you'll get the first problem, and that is selective policing. Okay, selective policing. Now, certain areas will receive more priorities than certain areas. Okay, and once you have that situation, of course you have complaints. People complain that, no, there were robbers yesterday night, and there was no police service that was available to us. And they here in Dar es Salaam, last night there was also a robbery incident, and the police responded immediately. Then they wonder, what is it that is going on in this area? But then the problem is resources. So once that was realized, the police force, and again I was involved in this process, decided to embark on a modernization drive. Mm-hmm. Modernization in terms of really empowering it, giving it the tools that it needs. First of all, identifying the gaps. So we carried kind of a SWOT analysis to identify all the gaps that exist and then work towards modernizing the force. There, we identified that several resources will be needed. But when it came to some can be acquired through money, just invest some money and then you get them. But some need investment, like personnel. You really need to invest in terms of their training, in terms of their selection, in terms of their continuing education, among other things. So some can be resolved easily, while others would need a very long-term kind of strategy or plan. But then we realized that the modernization drive has to address both the existing and those who will be recruited. The existing personnel and those who will be recruited. You can't just say, now we are modernizing, we are buying new equipment and this. But these people have never used such equipment. They do not know how to use them. They don't even understand why they should use those kind of things. Somehow are used to arresting first and then investigating later. Mm-hmm. And then you are telling them today that, no, you investigate first and then you arrest. So they don't understand. So you still need to invest in these people who already exist.
Right.
For those who will be recruiting, it's not a problem because you will be training them around those new tenants. But you still have people who are unemployed. Mm-hmm. So we realize that while you recruit and train, you still need to retrain the individuals that are already in place. But then we discovered also that the police is becoming overwhelmed by the new challenges. And the new challenges in terms of that crime is becoming sophisticated. Mm. Crime is becoming, the traditional way of committing crimes probably have just remained in just a few areas. Stealing today is done in a very organized way. Even murders, people murder and conceal. They work against anything that will make them caught by the law enforcement system.
Yeah.
So even the murderers of today are not like those of yesterday. Mm. And so crime has changed. And the challenge is not really to address the conventional crimes which were being committed decades ago. It's to address the modern ways of committing crime. And so it's like the police, instead of being a preventive tool, it's a reactive tool. So you no longer prevent, you no longer detect, you are reacting to incidents. And when you have fewer police officers, then it means that will be your daily job. And then you forget about the other functions of the police force, which is prevention, detection, among other things. So once we realized that, we thought of retooling. And this is not purely training, because probably there isn't much you can achieve through training, but try to retool them, give them new techniques, give them exposure to other systems which have already responding to such problems, bringing in a few experts from outside to come and share ideas on how you deal with the new challenges, the new situation. So again, all these are kind of issues that are taking place. You realize eventually that the system is responding, but then the actual results will take time. But as you change the system, you realize that criminals also change their tactics. I think you were here last week or 2 weeks before. You were in Dar es Salaam, when did you come?
Actually, only on the weekend, on Saturday night.
So. If you were here 2 weeks ago, then you would have realized that even robbers have discovered that you don't need to go to a bank with a machine gun. You can actually take a hand grenade.
And read about that.
Yeah. And do cause havoc and just steal and go. This is now, you realize now these are challenges, not so much because that's the way the society is, but because now the society has to face other new realities. Okay, it has to face other new realities. Realities caused by migration, realities caused by the wars that we have around us, in those places where they are still fighting. Realities caused by the mayhem and chaos in Somalia, you know, these are things which you have to contend and deal with. Somalia is just a few miles away from Dar es Salaam. And people come in boats and ships and everything, you know. If you don't have an effective system of controlling those issues, it means they lose hand grenades in Somalia and all those places find their way in a city like Dar es Salaam. Now, and that's why we talk of intelligence-led policing now, but then you must have a system that is properly configured to really be able to respond to these new challenges. And the challenges are many. There is not just because of the banks, about the banks, they're also about theft on roads, in our own houses, and in the way we deal with information and transmitting information. There are many challenges. We talk about ATM theft. Is a new problem in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, but it's not a new problem in other places of the world.
ATM
problem in the banks.
Yeah.
And so you have experts, people who know how to use telephones and other things to steal from banks. These are new things. So as you keep on reforming, you have to really address the new challenges which come up.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very challenging.
Quite an interesting area.
Yeah,
quite an interesting area.
I had a couple of questions. I just wanted to ask, you mentioned the, I don't want to say inadequacy of some of the laws, but the way in which they don't encompass the full range of situations that police or officers encounter. Mm-hmm. And are there any effects or attempts being made to reform the laws themselves, or is it being dealt with through the new general orders?
No, is there are attempts to reform the laws themselves through the Law Reform Commission. And so if a law has been identified as a problem, it's normally addressed. Yes, it's normally addressed. But then the way you change laws take time. Unlike the general orders, which you resolve the matter with the police, then the laws have to deal with a whole range of stakeholders that are involved. So attempts are there. Attempts are there. They may have take time, but they are there. And for example, the immediate challenge was in relation to how do you address domestic violence, for example. Do you address that in the police general orders, and then the laws themselves are not properly organized? So they discovered that the best way is to really address the laws first, and then deal with the police general orders later.
I see. And you mentioned one of the things that you're able to see that the system is responsive, but that the results take some time.
Yes. Yeah. We continue.
And so one of the things I was wondering is how you're able to measure the effect of the changes that you have been instrumental in implementing, particularly, say, the general orders. How are you able to gauge that people are actually following them? Are there monitoring mechanisms or any evaluation systems?
Yes, among the changes that we installed, and we think it's good, mm-hmm. is the establishment of an office that will do the monitoring. Mm. And this is an independent system outside the police force itself.
Sure.
We thought that the police has its own way of monitoring its own activities, yes. But the lawyers say no man should be a judge of his own cause. So there was a directorate that was established to do the monitoring and, yes, manage complaints. And so the type of complaints which are received nowadays are different, largely different from those which were being received before the general orders were changed. And that's one way that we use to measure. But the second is to look at the nature of complaints. The nature of complaints received, which were being received before the orders were made, related to arbitrary treatment, torture, and all those kind of things. And we realized that it's because the orders themselves were not very clear on those kind of issues. So you realize that even the police officers now, they know, before a complaint is received, you may have been dealt with by your own superior.
I see.
Because then you have done something contrary to the orders. But before then, there was no reference to such issues. So you realize that the nature of complaints received nowadays are not so much on those issues. There could be somewhere around issues probably of bribery or some police officers not taking action immediately or things which... they're bad, but they're not as bad when you compare to the situation that used to exist.
And related perhaps to specific officers rather than institutional problems.
Correct. Now related to very specific individuals than when you relate the issue to the whole institution.
System.
Yeah.
I see.
Now these are specific issues rather than the general. And we think also the reforms have led to separation of powers in certain areas. Mm-hmm. For example, prosecution. So the police would not prosecute. They would send these matters to the prosecutors who are under the National Prosecution Service. The police would not escort prisoners to remand and other places. This job will be done by the prison service. And therefore, the room for abuse has been minimized. It takes a courageous officer to abuse a person nowadays. It's not all that easy. Because exposure will become very easy. Now, that has also helped in identifying now the weak up spots.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can tell easily these are the weaker spots, and then you can address them.
So just on the directorate that does the monitoring and complaints collection, where is it housed? And
in the Ministry of Home Affairs.
Okay, so it's okay.
In
so
the Ministry of Home Affairs.
Okay, and it was established
three years back.
Okay,
3-4 years back now.
Okay,
so it's still new, but it's good. It's there and it's starting to put itself into the picture.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That sounds like a very worthwhile system, and. I wanted to ask about the separation of powers, particularly as it relates to the prosecuting. So this was previously handled by police prosecutors?
Correct.
And now it's been...
handled by state attorneys.
State attorneys,
yes,
okay.
Under the National Prosecution Service, which is independent and has been created as a constitutional office.
Okay, so that's a completely new...
Completely new.
And
2007? Sure. 2004 in terms of the idea,
mm-hmm.
but then the law and the system is 2008.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay.
About a year old.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, this is really an incredibly wide-ranging mm-hmm. number of reforms. And I was wondering, in your, as somebody who's been involved since the early 90s in these types of reforms, it seems to me that at this stage it's, the reforms are much bigger and much less piecemeal and aimed at more holistically reforming the system. And you mentioned the increase in crime as being one of the factors that sort of necessitated this. But I wonder if you could account for perhaps why it's happening now, or why it started, or at least a few years ago. Like, what was the point at which it became an absolute necessity to do a complete restructuring?
I think... if we go back in history,
mm-hmm.
the idea to restructure the police force actually started in the 70s.
Okay.
For some reason, reports and recommendations were made and were never carried out.
Okay, sure.
In around 1985, then some of the recommendations were carried out. And these were largely results of the enactment of the Bill of Rights.
Okay.
And that's why in 1985... there was no other option except to change the Criminal Procedure Act, because apparently people think, many people do not know exactly how abuses start. They basically start with the criminal procedure system that you have in place. If your criminal procedure system is the way you handle criminal cases, the methods and the institutions and the other things you have, if they're not properly ordered, mm-hmm. then you always have all these problems. So in 1985, then some of the recommendations which were made in the 70s were carried out.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of the recommendations that was carried out was to ensure that no, search can only be done with a warrant unless the offense is committed in the presence of the officer in question.
Presence of the...
If a person commits a crime in the presence of a police officer,
okay.
then you arrest them, then you can search the individual. But if that's not the situation, you must have a warrant. So that was a good intervention, because then mm-hmm. you did away with this possibility of a police officer coming to knock at your door and saying, now we want to search your office or your house or this. That was a bitter.
Mm-hmm.
But then those were very limited interventions. So in the 90s, again, another study was done.
Mm-hmm.
And this study came up more or less with the same recommendation like those which were made in the 70s. Yes.
Okay.
So this kind of confirmed that there is a problem. You really need to deal with these kind of issues. But then, in the 90s, crime has really shot. And the public was complaining so much that there was no way you could just keep a blind eye to those kind of issues. And the complaints ranged from abuse to inaction to lack of skills to a lot of things. And so that's why I think the police force itself realized that, well, it's better we started from within.
Okay, this is part three of the interview.
Yes, and we were talking about why now?
Why now?
So
yeah.
I was saying that the public was complaining mm-hmm. so much about almost everything,
mm-hmm.
abuse, inaction, poor distribution of police officers, and a lot of other things. So the police realized that, okay, charity begins at home. And why don't you start to look at your own house and then before someone tells you, no, you know, it's not going to be like that forever.
Yeah.
So that's why they started to look at their own systems. And then institutions like ours here at the university, we also thought we can help in this regard by providing some training, helping them in doing some studies. Our job is to research, so we research and realize, okay, probably this is where you're going, doing it wrongly.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you do it this way? Probably it will help.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came in also. But then we also realized that the government thought police is supposed to really serve the people. And if the police is becoming unpopular, it means the government itself will become unpopular. So again, other interventions through the legal sector reform program.
Mm-hmm.
But also, myself, and I think my colleagues will also collaborate on this, there was more interaction between our police and other police institutions outside Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
SABCO, this is South African police chiefs and other things, came in also. We have the East African police chiefs and other things also came in. I think there's a lot of other initiatives from the AU level,
mm-hmm.
and also initiatives from the Interpol,
mm-hmm.
the global picture.
Mm-hmm.
And also you realize now you come into the new problems that we are facing in terms of terrorism, in terms of cyber crimes, in terms of... So that has made the police community around the world kind of come together. And through that process, you also realize, you learn, you realize that we do this in Tanzania, but our colleagues are doing it the other way.
Yes.
And probably that is a more effective way of doing it. So there are all these factors
mm-hmm.
which actually has helped to push the reform agenda a bit further than it used to be in the previous years. So there are many reasons.
That it just sort of coalesced at that point. One of the things I have observed, though, is that there seems to have been very high-level political support.
Correct.
And political leadership, and even significant amounts of involvement in various workshops and seminars.
Correct.
What is your opinion on how this has affected the process?
That's one of the factors, actually.
Yeah.
The political will is so high. You see... For example, in 2005, the new president, the current president,
mm-hmm.
appointed the Inspector General,
mm-hmm.
who is a learned person, has gone to school, he has worked internationally,
mm-hmm.
and he has a law degree,
mm-hmm.
and he appointed people who have really had good education to lead the police. And I think you don't need anything much bigger than that,
right.
than that will that let me get the right people to the various positions and then ask these people to help me in the change agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And once we have such people, they can relate very easily with other people because they also they have wider knowledge of issues. You see, so these are kind of interventions, and the political will is unquestionable, actually. It's unquestionable. At this point in time, it's unquestionable. Yeah.
So going forward, what do you see as the future challenges or the future obstacles, perhaps, that the reform program may encounter?
I think the biggest challenge is will relate to the following issues.
Mm-hmm.
One, personnel. You still need police officers. The police officers currently are few. You really need more, and that has to go into the public purse in terms of money, their salaries and training and all those issues. So you'll keep on having this shortfall, but the key to many of the problems that we have is to get people into the police force and actually attract them to the police force, because it's also about changing the attitude that the police force is for people who have not gone to school. I think make it as one of the places where people can be employed, okay?
Right.
So that means you address their work environment, you address their salaries and all those kind of issues, which, of course, the current IGP is addressing already.
Right.
But then it will take time. But the other thing which I realize is for many institutions to realize that the police can really be effective if these other institutions themselves are not effective. What I mean here, if our city planning continues to be the way it is, then we'll be asking too much from the police, because then it's making it impossible for them to operate. So if we keep on doing the kind of things we do in our cities, then we'll continue to have problems forever. So this is what I mean, that other institutions must also realize that they are part of the policing process. This is not just for you disorganize your house and then you call the police to come and organize it and control crimes. You know, it won't work. It may just work in a very limited way. So other institutions should also realize that they are part of the policing process. The other thing which I think is important is to realize that the people themselves, that culture of helping the police, of being the first responders, really has to grow. Unless that grows, then it's very difficult to police in the modern way, in the modern days and the kind of things we have. How do you make the person the first responder? Other countries have managed it, but in our situation, we still have a long way to go. That people are not yet there, mm-hmm. in terms of really being able to help the police, to be really the first line of action in terms mm-hmm. of crimes and other things. And that, again, is a challenge which I see as an issue that has to be. And finally, I realized that we need to keep on investing in training. Because crime is not a static animal, it keeps on changing. Mm. And the techniques and the environment keep also changing. Technology is changing very fast. Today probably you don't need a lot of the physical manual things. Probably technology enabled kind of policing might be a solution to some of the problems and challenges that we have. So it's all those kind of issues that I see as challenges for the future. Yeah. We have them today, but they'll keep on growing into the future.
Excellent. Well, so I don't want to take up any much more of your valuable time. I just perhaps wanted to give you an opportunity to reflect on anything that I haven't asked, or perhaps anything that's particularly distinctive about this Tanzanian police reform program, unless you feel we've covered most of the key points.
One thing which I should say is the reform agenda is being driven wholeheartedly. Really, everybody is happy that these kind of reforms are taking place. And I think that is key to change. If you want to enlist a positive change, I think you have to have that people should feel that it's a good thing that is happening. Probably they don't know exactly which direction to go, but at least accepting the idea itself is very good. Secondly, I just hope that the leadership will continue to be the way it is. I just hope that will continue to be the situation. These areas are very delicate, and people change hearts very easily. And I realize you have a new president, and he thinks you guys are not doing the right things, and think I want this direction, and that's all. So you have all those kind of. But I just hope that. What we have started will be sustained into the future. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the only things which I should say at this point in time. I hope it will, the results that we have recorded will be sustained and even better results into the future.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Well, on that note, I think we'll end here. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.